started to grow a mustache. I mean, he started to resemble Dennis Hopper.
Douglas has a new memoir called I Blame Dennis Hopper. I hope you can join us. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our senior producer is Roberta Shurrock. Our technical director and engineer is Audrey Bentham, with additional engineering support from Joyce Lieberman and Julian Hertzfeld. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Our associate producer for online media is Molly C.B. Nesper. John Myers directed the show. For Terry Gross, I'm David Bean Cooley.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Children's Health, committed to making life better for children. Its main hospital, Children's Medical Center Dallas, provides care in a range of specialties, including cardiology and orthopedics. Learn more at childrens.com/excellence. And from Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years.
President Obama took office promising to follow the rules on national security. Here's the problem.
A lot of the situations the government is encountering now in the sort of post-9/11 world are completely different than what the rules were written for.
We'll scrutinize Obama's approach to national security later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Tonight on 360 North, watch the BBC World News at 7 and Alaska Weather at 7:30. At 8, Forum at 360 checks in with economic and public policy experts on how tumbling oil prices affect everything in Alaska. Great Conversations is next at 9. At 10, The Open Mind explores how to build a more peaceful society. Great Decisions in Foreign Policy considers climate and security at 10:30. Tonight on 360 North and 360north.org.
Welcome to a very spooky edition of Juno Afternoon on this Friday. I'm Andy Klein, your host, and today we're going to hear about a lot of Halloween festivities and activities. We're also going to be hearing from Elaine Schroeder, who's going to talk to us about a film concerning climate change at the Gold Town. We've got George Kuhar coming in from Playboy Spaceman. He's going to be talking about Saturday's Halloween Dance of the Three Skulls. Perseverance Theater's new production of Sweeney Todd, a very spooky, scary story is playing, and we'll hear more about that, and we'll get the spooky details about this year's Ghost Walk, all that, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, and more coming up on this edition of A Juno Afternoon after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In Canada, First Nations leaders will meet next week with government officials to discuss recent allegations of abuse by provincial police officers towards Native women. Dan Karpinchuk has more.
Tensions and tempers have run high since the allegations surfaced more than a week ago, with Native leaders demanding an immediate meeting with Premier Philippe Couillard. Ghislaine Picard is the chief of the Assembly of First Nations of Quebec and Labrador.
It needs to be addressed at the highest level possible. In our view, it cannot go lower than the Premier of Quebec, Mr. Couillard. So we are demanding that a meeting take place as soon as possible with the Premier and First Nation leadership.
Both sides have softened their tone since, and Picard, instead of demanding the meeting, has since invited the Premier to a meeting. But it's clear the Quebec government has been on the defensive for several days over the issue. Native leaders say the region in northern Quebec near the town of Val-d'Or is in crisis, and that the province's Aboriginal people have lost confidence in the provincial police force. Several Aboriginal women had come forward alleging they had either been assaulted by police officers or forced to perform sexual acts. 8 provincial police officers have been suspended pending the results of an inquiry. The Premier says his government is willing to launch a public inquiry into relations between Natives and non-Natives in Quebec. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Federal agencies are cracking down on the reproduction and sale of fake American Indian art. This week, agents issued more than a dozen search warrants, made 3 arrests, handed down 10 subpoenas, and seized assets in 4 states, including New Mexico, under the 2-year investigation called Operation Alzuni. Officials say this is the largest investigation since the inception of the more than 2-decades-old Indian Arts and Crafts Act. Indian Arts and Crafts Board Chairman Harvey Pratt says it's illegal to sell or display any goods, which falsely suggests it's an Indian product.
The Indian Arts and Crafts Board believe this has been a landmark investigation. I think it's going to promote us forward to cause other investigations to occur along the same lines.
At a press conference Thursday in Albuquerque, Pratt, along with federal officials, announced the ongoing investigation. 3 New Mexicans, Nael Ali, Mohammed Abed Manazra, and Christina Bowen, are charged with conspiracy to violate the law. They allegedly imported and sold Filipino-made jewelry as Native American-made. For example, 2 Navajo-style rings were sold for nearly $700. Warrants were executed Wednesday in jewelry stores in Albuquerque, Santa Fe, and Gallup, and a production shop in Zuni. Officials say fake art hurts tribes and individuals economically and diminishes the livelihoods of Indian artists by lowering the market and giving an unfair competition. It also lowers artist standards. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service led the investigation after entering into an agreement in 2012 with the Indian Arts and Crafts Board. There are only 2 agents assigned to do just that. Yet officials, including U.S. Attorney for New Mexico, Damon Martinez, says this is a priority.
We're hoping that this will send a message to those folks who are selling the fake material, the fake jewelry, under false pretenses, that they will get the message that this is important and they should watch out.
Renowned Anishinaabe artist Sam English says his work was ripped off before and he took the individual to court. English says fake art is hard to monitor.
I think it's been a major priority for the last 100 years, because if you want to maintain the integrity of Indian arts and crafts, then you have to show that there is integrity. When this starts happening, people stay away from Old Town, you know, or they stay away from Santa Fe. Indian artists quit, their stuff stopped selling for a while. We need the money. We have to keep it going. So if we had more active investigators going on monitoring this, it would be great.
If convicted, the 3 people face 5 years in prison and up to a $250,000 fine. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for this program
is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. You too can become a modern-day warrior. Stand firm with NARF. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Everyone is invited to an Alaska Native Arts Market, an exhibit of Tlingit and Indigenous weavers at Centennial Hall, Friday and Saturday, October 30th and 31st. Opening at 9 a.m., it's a featured event at the Sharing Our Knowledge Conference, a four-day multidisciplinary conference of Alaska Native tradition bearers, meeting with artists, academics, students, and other learners. For schedules and admission information, go to sharingourknowledge.org. This message is brought to you by Tlingit Readers, Incorporated.
And welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today, and with me in the studio is Elaine Schroeder. Elaine, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, Andy.
And Elaine, you're helping to put together a series of films, actually, that talks about climate change. They're happening at the Gold Town, and one's coming up this Monday and next Saturday as well.
Hey, that's right. And the name of the film is This Changes Everything, and it just came out, and it just got rave reviews at the Toronto Film Festival. So I'll repeat. It's going to be shown Monday, November 2nd at 7 p.m. and Saturday, November 7th at 4:30 p.m. And it is... This Changes Everything. If any of you have read the book, it's kind of the seminal book on climate change by Naomi Klein. She and her filmmaker husband made the movie, and it's been in the making for a couple of years. It is a riveting film, challenging our assumptions about dealing with climate disruption, and it's very hopeful. Many of us do not, on this very station, K2, I did a program about a month ago on climate change repression.
Mm-hmm.
It's different from climate change denial. It's repression. Those of us who read and are somewhat educated understand that about climate change, and it's very, very serious, but it's like really bad news. So what you want to do, the psychology of any bad news, is just kind of put your head in the sand and you don't want to deal with it.
Avoid it a little bit.
Avoid it, like let's not talk about it.
And yeah.
Because I'm an activist in the field, I have ruined many a dinner party by talking about it. But
Elaine,
in the old
talking
days,
about climate change again, right?
Hey, back 40 years ago, I was ruining dinner parties talking about the women's movement and how we needed to withdraw from Vietnam. So I'm used to it. I'm used to ruining dinner
Those
parties.
Those are lively dinner parties as well, though. I like to think of them as lively.
But this is more important than everything.
Yeah.
Anything. And so it might be hard to decide to see a climate change movie, but what Naomi Klein did is make a movie for people, a climate change movie for people who don't want to go to a climate change movie. So this is for you. And the directors promise you won't be bummed out. Rather, you'll be energized. And the reason is, because it is a hopeful film that highlights creative activists who are confronting climate crisis around the globe.
And really in Alaska, and I wanted to talk a little bit about the organization that's bringing this to Juneau, which is the Alaska Climate Action
Network.
Network, okay. And tell me a little bit about that network.
Well, this is a really cool group.
Yeah.
And since the world is getting hotter, we better be a pretty cool group. And we, we, even though it sounds like it's Alaska-wide, right now it's Juneau-based. It was founded in January of this year.
Okay.
Barely a year ago. And it's a group of Juneauites who came together to work on climate change solutions. And as you know, Alaska's on the front lines of the impacts of climate change. You know, Juneau commercial and subsistence and sport fishers know that they have trouble predicting the weather, predicting fish runs. There's much more rain. There's less snow. Eagle Crest was a disaster last year, and I'm crossing my fingers that since we bought passes, that it'll be better this year.
We all are, yeah.
So what we do, the Alaska Climate Action Network focuses on the causes of climate change, such as carbon emissions, as well as the solutions, such as government support for renewable energy, possible carbon tax, even in the state of Alaska, which seems pretty impossible. You may have seen us at the 4th of July parade. Did you go?
I didn't. I missed the 4th of July parade here. I was out of town.
Okay.
But,
well, yeah. We had dozens of people. So we're growing. Our group is growing. And we had a Noah's Ark
I heard about the Noah's Ark.
Yeah, the Noah's
Ark. Yeah. Okay.
It was very heavy, so it had to be abandoned halfway through the parade. But the other thing, seriously, it was made with wood, which styrofoam would have been a lot better. And then we also had a very large spoof on a car of Shell Oil's drilling rig. Its official name is the Polar Pioneer, and we dubbed it the Polar Profiteer. So Alaska Can is breaking a big taboo, and we're a grassroots organizing force, really connecting people in the movement with where they fit best. And why is it a taboo? Because we're an oil state.
Mm-hmm. Now, why is it something that is so you're so passionate about personally?
Well, I've always been involved in environmental issues, and I'm a big reader. And I read Bill McKibben, his book called Earth, and I've been reading about climate change for a long, long time.
I mean, a lot of us have. It's certainly not a new issue.
Yeah, and frankly, I retired a month ago, so I'm totally retired. And what I decided to do is devote my free time to what I think is an extremely important issue. And I've worked on war and peace efforts, and I just feel climate change is where it's what we mm-hmm. desperately need to do. And, you know, the Paris talks are coming up. Okay, so the UN talks on climate change are starting in Paris at the end of November and through the first week or two of December.
And you're going to attend?
Oh, I wish I could.
Oh, okay.
I was just telling Andy that I was just in Paris for 5 weeks and I attended some climate change meetings.
Okay.
Yes, but no, I will be here for Christmas with my family.
Good.
But anyway, this conference is a make or break it for the world. And that sounds like some sort of cheesy plot for a movie. But it isn't. This is reality. If we don't lower carbon emissions substantially, we're toast.
It certainly seems
we're
like the clock is ticking here.
The clock
right?
is ticking. You know, it's interesting. I've been an activist on other movements like the women's movement, and you always had enough time. I mean, it was like, okay, you know, I'm going to go on vacation and we'll get back to work on it, and or let's take a year off or whatever. This is absolutely time sensitive. If we can't put it off, we can't take our time reducing carbon emissions, because once they're in the air, we can't take them out. They're there.
It's interesting that, as you said, Alaska, excuse me, is such a focus of this. I mean, it certainly was a big focus of the president's visit to Alaska.
I was up there.
Yeah, and I went up. Very, you know, it seems like we are. Really are the front lines, especially in America, the front line state on showing these very first signs
of
climate change that's
ever
happening.
I was just at the Klan conference, which I'm attending today, the Tlingit Klan conference, and there was a session on environmental changes in Southeast Alaska due to climate change. And those of us who are more urban, even in Juneau, you could be a bit urban, we don't even realize what subsistence berry pickers are going through. Like whole species of berries may not happen in a particular year. I just want to mention something, Andy, that this movie I'm talking about today is one of three. So in the middle of the month, we're going to be showing the Yes Men Are Revolting, and at the end of the month, we'll be showing Merchants of Doubt, because what we're doing is we're leading up to the Paris conference, and we'll be showing them on the weekend, the movie Merchants of Doubt, that there will be marches all across the world. So that was something I witnessed in Paris. Europe is about 15 years ahead of us in terms of mitigation and adaptation. I mean, their train system. They're urban planning, so there's urban density. And when I was in Paris, the mayor called for a day without cars.
Oh, I saw that.
Did you?
People were walking down the Champs-Élysées and all
me.
That. Oh, okay.
That
there you go.
Me. I was in 7th Heaven.
Yeah.
And gosh, did you realize how incredible it is to be in a place without cars? Mm. Well, in Juneau, no problem. I mean, we have so little traffic.
Right.
But in Paris, it turned a very noisy city into utter paradise.
Well, just to go over it once again, this is part of the Climate Action Film Series that's happening all this month in November, as you say, leading up to the Paris talks. It's all happening at the Goldtown Theater, and the first one is starting Monday, the 2nd, at 7 p.m., and then it repeats Saturday the 7th at 4:30, and that's called This Changes Everything. As you
yes.
said, it's a.
And I just want to mention, you can buy tickets at the door, they're $10, or you can go online at www.alaskaclimateaction.org and buy tickets in advance.
Great. Thanks.
So we'll be there.
Thanks so much for coming in, Elaine, and
Thank
letting
you.
Us know about this film series that's
Great.
Happening. Elaine Schroeder from the Alaska Climate Action Network.
You got
Thanks
it.
So much, Elaine. Well, that's a little bit of an older song there. That's called Nosferatu. It's by one of the people that joins me in the studio right now, George Kuhar.
Hi, Andy.
How you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you?
Nick Wagner.
Hey.
Look at you.
Look at me.
Sneaking into Juno.
Sneaking in for a hot second?
In the dark of the night. When did you get here? Just today?
Yesterday.
Yesterday.
Yep.
You've been referred to as the gravy of Playboy Spaceman, which I will talk about that in a little bit. But let's talk about this thing that's happening tomorrow night. It's the Playboy Spaceman, Silver Jackson, DJ Taco Todd, Alaskan Scorcher, Dance of the Three Skulls.
Right. You know, we're going to dance, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Because we know how much you freaky people like to dance.
People are freaky. Well, tell me a little bit about it. It's the second annual, right?
Essentially, you know, Bridget and I, we usually do a show around Halloween, it seems like, and last year we decided to give it some kind of skull kind of anthem, and we wanted to just keep working with that. We got this great piece of art that David Lang from High Tide Tattoo had donated to us, and we just like it so much, we just want to keep using it, and, you know, as a kind of a symbol or a logo for a Halloween event that we just want to keep perpetuating.
It's a super awesome logo and poster. People are seeing them around town, I'm sure. It's a big green poster. But so this is starting tomorrow night, 8:00 is when it's happening. This is Halloween night, so clearly. Costumes are encouraged.
Clearly.
And you can go. Last year you did it the day after Halloween, so it was a big Day of the Dead party.
That's right.
But this could be some of that. That's great. That's an accepted, amazing costume, of course. Any
For
Day
sure.
of the Dead stuff. But also, if you just want to come in your costumes, I'm not coming as Day of the Dead, but I am going.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
You're going. Yeah. I mean,
is
yeah.
a secret. Oh, it is a secret.
Oh.
Your costume's totally a secret.
Well, I look at the secret.
It's like you're stroking it right now.
I'm looking.
I'm not going to make
right
folks
here.
At home mad because they don't know what Andy's touching right
on
now.
On my face.
All right, I've said too much.
But so tell me a little bit about the roster of people you got lined up here. This is pretty cool.
Well, it's Alaska Scorcher, which is Todd Mace. He performs as DJ Taco Todd. He has a show on Excellent Radio on Tuesday nights. It's a really great show. He has a great mix of '60s garage rock and Bollywood and rocksteady ska. Yeah, it's really cool.
It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, he's got a really great show on Excellent Radio, and so he's going to be doing. I believe he's doing all vinyl sets now. He's like throwing the computer out and just spinning turntables.
That's
down.
What I understand as well. Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. We're excited about that. And Sitka artist Silver Jackson, we got him in the lineup. He's a really, really neat artist. He does visual art and musical art, too. And, of course, he's going to be doing music tonight. But he's actually been really busy. He's been traveling all over the world and doing shows in Germany and New York City and Japan. He just got back from Japan yesterday, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then off to Paris
had
a kind
of show
or this gig in Juneau. So Silver Jackson, people might know him as one of the main organizers of the Homeskillet Festival that happened in Sitka for 10 years. And
that's right.
Now that he's sort of said, okay, the 10th year is going to be the last year. And now it's now he's kind of freed up to go pursue his own musical talent.
Totally. Yeah, he's graduated into rock star from the Rockstardom University. He's free to be a huge celebrity now.
And then Playboy Space Band, what's the lineup? For tomorrow night.
Yeah, where it's myself and Bridget and Nicholas Wagner, who's here with us in the studio, and Jason Messing and Simon Taylor.
So the same five guys that played the last year.
And last year, right.
You've had a pretty consistent lineup for a while now. That's pretty
It's
awesome.
Been almost 2 years, a little over 2 years since we first started playing together and like making music as a five-piece band.
Right. Nick, you're not going to be behind the drum set, right? You're going to be doing more of the percussion.
Yeah, same stuff as always done.
Electronic percussion kind of stuff?
Yeah.
Or mixer?
I got a sampling pad and digital percussion pad.
He's got all kinds of crazy sounds in there
to mix it up.
Samples.
Some acoustic percussion, nothing crazy.
What's that like as a drummer? Like you're used to sitting behind the drum set, right? Doing the, having that.
Yeah.
And then in this setup, you're more like you're just kind of standing there at this pad, right? And
it's fun. I love it, especially with like real drummer right there. Doing. I just get to do all the stuff that you can't do when you're just holding down a steady beat.
You do all the beep beep boom.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep. That stuff. Yeah.
Well, that's cool. Boom chick.
And has your equipment? Have you continued to increase and experiment with the equipment you're using?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
So new stuff, exciting stuff happening.
Yeah, not just playing, percussion, but doing little synth stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, notes and things like that. It's pretty cool.
Complements some of the bass lines in the songs. They kind of like on one of our songs, there's kind of a call and response between Simon, the bass player, and then Nick playing like this synth bass part on his pads. It's pretty cool.
Yeah,
let's talk about. Let's talk about live music costing money.
Well,
let's talk about
about it.
Right? I love this. I love you guys are charging. So, there's three great bands playing individual. You're going to have hours of amazing music happening all live. It's $15 at the door, cheap.
I think that's a steal of a deal.
Yeah. But I mean, I think it's really something that I so much endorse in Juneau when bands say, we're worth money. Let's right.
Yeah. Well, and it's expensive to put on a show like this too.
Yeah.
There's quite a few people have to make it through the door before we start seeing a return on what's happening here. But it's not just about money; it's about doing something nice.
Yeah, it's a party.
It's a huge commitment of your time and energy, though, to get this thing together every year.
It is, yeah. And, that's what I like about committing to, doing annual events like I do an annual birthday show. If I just left it to my whim of, I feel like doing it, I would never do it. Committing to, I'm doing this every year, then, that's kind of helps get things done.
What kind of music you guys, for Playboy Spaceman, or what's the set look like? Is it going to be a lot of the newer stuff that you've been working on, or?
About half new and half old stuff, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And at least one cover I know of.
Did we tell you about that already?
I'm not going to say anything.
All right.
But it's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
Well, all right. It's happening. It's all happening. Anything else you want to tell folks about?
Well,
for
I just want to make sure everybody knows it's at the Rockwell Ballroom. That's some people know that as the Old Elks Lodge. Some people know that as the Old Latinos. It's down there on Franklin Street.
Oh, I forgot it was Latinos.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah.
Rockwell.
A couple doors down from the Baranoff Hotel, across the street from Saffron, the Indian restaurant.
And it's the upstairs big ballroom up there, which is this great space.
It's great for dancing. Yeah. It was made for dancing. There's these long metal rods that are in the floor that when people start dancing, everyone kind of feels the movement. It's a great space to dance in.
It's really fun, really good room.
What, is this our third time playing there?
This is our third time playing there. That's right.
Yeah, it is a great spot. I love playing there.
Are you playing now? Where are you now? Your Seattle?
Yep.
Area? So you got a band down there? What's going on?
I do got a band. A band called Endo Glen down there. It's a lot of fun.
What kind of music?
I don't know.
Generally, I don't know.
I guess they've been labeled as just kind of indie rock stuff, but yeah.
And you're just rock and roll. Just straight up drums, or are you mixing it up or?
Yep, just drums.
Uh-huh.
Acoustic. So
nice.
Fun. It's a lot of fun. It's keeping me very busy.
Are you gigging a lot?
We are. We gigged a lot. We're slowing down because we're working on an album right now. But
are you?
Yeah.
So you're in the studio or not yet? Quiet,
we're doing it ourselves.
It's okay.
But it's sounding pretty good. Sounding decent.
Yeah.
You know.
No, well, that's the way you do it, right? Yeah.
Build up from there, yeah.
Make some basement tapes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Literally.
All right, well, this is the Skull Party. It's happening tomorrow night. Starts at 8 o'clock. It's at the Rockwell. $15 at the door. And it's brought to you by High Tide Tattoo, who are awesome.
Right? They're more than awesome.
These guys are awesome. Yeah,
Dave's always supportive of
and
my music.
Excellent radio, which I personally think is pretty cool.
It's pretty excellent.
I think it's a pretty cool radio station. And I'm going to be there. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'll see you guys there.
All right.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Andy.
All right.
Thanks, Andy.
Attend the tale of Sweeney Todd. His skin was pale and his eye was odd. He shaved the faces of gentlemen who never thereafter were heard of again. He trod a path that few had trod. Did Sweeney Todd. The demon mother of Fleet Street. He kept a shop in London town of fancy kinds and good renown. And what if none of their souls were saved? They went to their maker impeccably shaved. By Sweeney Todd, the demon mother of Fleet Street.
There from the creepy show Sweeney Todd, Perseverance's newest performance, and we've got two of the actors here with us right now. It's Tommy Schaffler and Keith McCoy. Welcome to both of you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
And tell me a little bit about how you got connected up. I'll just ask you first, Keith, how you got connected up with doing Sweeney Todd stuff. This is
With Sweeney Todd, I've actually worked here. This is my fourth show here in Juneau with Perseverance. I first worked here in 2012 on Raisin in the Sun, and I've been coming back frequently since then. And when they announced they were doing Sweeney Todd, Shona, she reached out to me. Yeah, she reached out to me, and asked me would I be interested and could I send her some stuff, and so I sent it to her, and here I am.
There
so
you
I
go. Guess you that's like how it works. That's how it happens.
Yeah.
So you're playing Judge Turpin.
That is correct.
So
yes.
Well, tell me a little bit, what's that role?
The judge, he is. Some people would say he's the villain. you might say he's
like,
the bad
you
guy.
You have a little more sympathetic
exactly.
playing.
Exactly. You know, no one ever sees himself as a bad guy. You just react because of circumstance. But
if you're evil, yeah.
But so I played a judge. He's kind of the cause of Sweeney taking vengeance or Sweeney seeking vengeance. I do some things in the beginning of the play that ignite his fuel, and from there he seeks revenge or vengeance for what has happened to him and his family.
So you're the one that truly twists him.
Yes,
I like that laugh. That's an evil laugh I ever heard one. And Tommy, tell me a little bit. Pirelli, that's the name of your character, is
that's
that right?
That's right. I play the rival barber to Sweeney, and I guess if Judge Turpin is the fuel, and I'm the match that starts it, because I trigger his first bloodthirst, and so I threaten to blackmail him and reveal who he really is, and it's part of the story. I don't want to give too much away, but so that's my part. But I'm a pretty zany kind of silly character who turns a little more serious. Not a very big role, but it's pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so there's no one like nice in this, right? Everyone, it's all evil people.
Oh, well, no, because I think the character Anthony, I think he's pretty nice, kind of pure.
Yeah, Joanna, there's some
the victims. You mean?
the young lovers. The young lovers.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, you know,
and Enrique is playing Sweeney Todd,
yes,
right?
That's
okay,
correct.
Right.
Yes.
So he's great, known to locals here who've seen any Perseverance stuff in the past couple of years. He's been doing so much work there. Mm-hmm. So is it this? I'm thinking it's got to be fun, right? This is a pretty fun one to do.
Oh, yeah. This is glory. I mean, this is music and lyrics by Stephen Sondheim, which if you're any musical theater actor, just loves to get to do this kind of stuff. It's really great music to sing and really it's fun and dark and funny and powerful music. It's kind of epic melodrama, mm-hmm. You know, revenge story. So it's really fun. It's great for Halloween season to be working on this.
Yeah. You mentioned Raising the Sun, not a musical.
Not
right?
at all.
So, but are musicals, do you gravitate more towards them, or is this a newer departure for you?
No, it's not a departure for me. I kind of go where the work is.
Yeah, sure.
So
working actor. Yeah, right.
If it's a straight play, I do a straight play. If it's a musical, I do a musical. If it's a music, you know, whatever the case may be, my training and my program, they prepared us to be able to do everything. And the more you do, the more opportunities there are for you.
So where did you train?
I went to Norfolk State University in Norfolk, Virginia. And like I said, they made sure we were able to sing on a professional level, dance on a professional level, and act on a professional level. And for the past few years, that's what sustained me. The fact that I'm able to go from a straight play into a musical or go dance in somebody's ensemble. And it just goes back to what I said. The more you do, the more opportunities to have a lasting career.
Is there pretty complicated choreography in this as well as the music?
Not really. The music is enough.
Yeah,
the music
is
quite complicated.
So it's more like you're acting. It's obviously in a musical, but there aren't like big dance kind of numbers,
it's
really.
Numbers, I would say. The number is action, but the action complements the music.
Yeah, it's not like Oklahoma. There's not 42nd Street. There's not grand tap numbers or anything like that in this one. Yeah.
So what were you working on before this, and where were you?
I was in Lancaster, PA. I was working at a company called Sight and Sound, and I was doing Joseph. I was there for 5 months.
And how about you, Tommy?
I work as a college professor. I teach theater in West Virginia, so I'm actually on sabbatical this semester from West Virginia Wesleyan College, and here hanging out to do this.
We just sent one of ours down to West Virginia, right? Or to Virginia? You know, we just sent Boston Christopher, just left town and moved to Virginia,
Richmond, Virginia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But so that was everyone here was still stinging a little bit. But it's fine.
Yeah.
He needs
but no one ever leaves for good.
That's right.
We always come back.
That's right.
So you got kind of solicited by Shona to say, hey, you know, she knows you and thought you'd be good for this. Is that the same kind of how did that work for you as well?
Yeah, I Flor de Lino, who's directing the show, and Enrique and I all went to graduate school together at the University of Texas at Austin. And Flor de Lino reached out to me and said, hey, would you
you audition, send in a video, sort of like what they did with Keith. And so I did, and here I am. And I was here a few years ago to direct with Fleur Lino, Title of Show, the musical there. And so this is my second time in Juneau, and it's really great to be back. It's a great town.
Yeah. Are there major challenges to this show in particular that you like when you if you were to say, okay, we're going to put on Sweeney Todd, what are some of the first challenges that you think would arise?
What strikes me is the technical aspects of it can be very interesting. Usually there's a barber chair, and the people who end up getting hurt in the barber chair end up in the meat pies, which is part of the shtick of it. And so in some productions, there's a giant mechanism where the barber chair turns into a sliding board, and there's like a two-story set. And they've really done some imaginative things that, with the set in a different kind of way in this production. So that's something that's interesting. And then as Keith already mentioned, the music is just – it's beautiful and glorious and also – pretty challenging music to deliver. So there's a full orchestra.
That's what I was going to ask next. Is there a live full orchestra going?
Yes, there is. Yes, we have a full orchestra. Eight-piece, I think?
I forget. I guess there are maybe eight players, but one of the players is actually playing, I think, six or seven different instruments. He's playing. He's picking up the flute and then putting down the oboe and then the saxophone. I mean, it's amazing.
Right.
Yeah, it's a lot of really great musical talent in town that's being showcased.
Yeah, it seems like, just as someone who goes and watches theater, I almost just take it as, like, for granted, like, oh, they're going to do Sweeney Todd. Well, that'll be fun. And you don't think about, well, all right, you have to, like, we have to figure out mechanically how we're going to get these. I mean, special effects, essentially, right? That's happening. And you have to do live special effects and do it every night.
Yep.
What's the hardest part about doing it? Is it the repetitiveness of doing a play? Is that get hard, or is it still fun every night? Or
for me, it's still fun every night. I always approach it. You know, this audience, they've never seen the show before. So each night you have a different crowd, and you're able to impact that audience a different way than you probably did the night before. And, you know, with live theater, nothing is the same.
Right.
You try. You strive to make it the same every night, but nothing is the same. So you have to be ever-present, and you also have to be prepared just in case if something happens. How do you respond to it? And if you have to be focused in the story so you respond in a way that's appropriate to the story and what's happening within the scene. So it doesn't get boring. It never gets boring for me.
No.
I love it too much. I love it so much.
I would say that for this show, there's also a lot of violence in the show. And so
which
sort
is
of
fun.
Yeah, sort of PG. Yeah, PG versions of violence is not. But there's I have a kind of fun fight scene with Enrique.
Slapstick slight kind of.
It's pretty. It's
or no, it's real.
It looks realistic in a way. But and that's kind of a fun thing to get to work on. You know, I have a fun fight with Enrique, and there's a couple other moments of violence that are kind of exciting and dark.
How long do you have to work through a fight scene to get it really down? I mean, that seems like something that would have to be that's choreography in its own way.
It is, it's definitely fight choreography as a whole. It's just like any other like a dance, really. Like you start staging and you take it slow and then you speed it up to the speed that feels right, and you want to make sure that it's right 10 out of 10 times. Nobody's ever going to accidentally get whacked or thwacked. We were working on a moment the other night, and I leaned back, and Enrique was right behind me, and I almost accidentally headbutted him from the back, which wasn't even an intentional moment of violence. And I didn't. We avoided that moment, and then we figured out how to always avoid that moment. So, it's a thing you want to take your time with and spend time with.
Tell me some of the nuts and bolts. When's it starting? All that kind of stuff. How long's the run?
Sure.
Those kinds of things.
The show opens Friday, November 6th, and it runs through December 6th. You can get more information and tickets at ptalaska.org or by calling 463-TIXS. Also, this Sunday, Wednesday, and Thursday, there are pay-as-you-can previews, so people can show up and catch a peek of the show in advance. We're still working on it, rehearsing it, and just kind of and see how it grows.
What's the process when you do one of those pay-as-you-can? What's the process after that? How does that help?
How does it help us?
Yeah.
It's great for us because it gives us a little bit of an audience, so we get to sort of practice. We get to rehearse with an audience. That's how I look at it.
So you typically go through afterwards and really discuss audience reactions and those things? Or
Sometimes we do. Sometimes, Tommy said, we get to kind of see what works, what doesn't work, according to responses. And once again, it's still kind of a rehearsal for us, but being able to rehearse in front of people who haven't seen it before, and so we get their response. And as I said, we see what works, we see what doesn't work, and then we can tweak or change or clean things so they work better.
Yeah. And it just, I'm sure it also just gives you a runtime that gives you an idea about reaction time and those sure. kinds of things that happen.
Yeah, yeah. And as Keith said, it's different. Every time you perform, it's different. And so we've been performing for each other and for the tech staff for a while now. So there are things that we find hilarious in rehearsal that we get in front of an audience and they just sort of sit there and
so they're quiet,
crickets, right? And then other things that we find quite serious or powerful and they giggle at. So, you know, you never really know until you get in front of a crowd what they're going to find interesting or boring or whatever. So it's really good information. And I think it's a great way for people to see the show, you know, because they can pay whatever they wish.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's a musical of the macabre. It's Sweeney Todd, and it's starting next Friday, November 6th. There's Pay As You Can, as Tommy just said, Wednesday and Thursday of next week. And it runs all the way through December 6th. But make sure you get your tickets because these things do sell out, you know, guys out there listening. These Perseverance theaters are amazing, especially these kind of fun, big musicals and stuff. They're exciting, and it's wonderful to have that happening in town, especially in November as the days get a little bit longer, darker, and those kinds of things. It's nice to have a musical to go to. So Tommy Schauffler and Keith McCoy, thanks so much for coming in. It's Sweeney Todd. It's starting next Friday, and sounds like it's going to be a fun, really fun thing happening here. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. Coming up next, here's Writer's Almanac from Garrison Keillor.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 30th of October, 2015. It was on this day, 1938, a cylindrical Martian spaceship landed in Grover's Mill, New Jersey, and began incinerating onlookers with an alien heat ray, an event that was covered by the Columbia Broadcasting System and its affiliated stations and caused mass hysteria in the East. Of course, it was a hoax. It was a radio play based on the H.G. Wells novel, The War of the Worlds, presented by Orson Welles, the Mercury Theater of the Air. At the beginning of the broadcast, there was an announcement that what followed was a dramatic presentation was fiction, but many listeners missed the introduction, and there was general panic, especially in New Jersey. It was estimated that of the 6 million people who heard that broadcast, about 1.5 million believed that it was true, and more than 1 million others were genuinely terrified. It's the birthday of the poet and critic Ezra Pound, born Haley, Idaho, 1885, championed the modernist movement and encouraged many writers, William Butler Yeats and Robert Frost, William Carlos Williams, Marianne Moore, James Joyce, Ernest Hemingway, and T.S. Eliot. It was Ezra Pound who edited T.S. Eliot's The Wasteland and cut about half of it out. It's the birthday of the journalist Robert Caro, born in New York City, 1936, who has spent the last 30 years writing a 4-volume biography of Lyndon Johnson, for which he has read 34 million documents at the LBJ Library in Austin, Texas, and conducted more than 1,000 interviews. It's the birthday of the second president of the United States, John Adams, Quincy, Massachusetts, 1735. John Adams, who said, "Democracy never lasts long. It soon wastes, exhausts, and murders itself. There was never a democracy that did not commit suicide." It's the birthday of Fred W. Friendly, born Ferdinand Friendly Wachenheimer in New York City, 1915, went to work for CBS Radio and there met Edward R. Murrow, whose producer Friendly became. They did a number of news documentaries together for CBS News, where Fred W. Friendly resigned in protest in 1966 when CBS scrapped a hearing on Vietnam so they could run a rerun of I Love Lucy. Here's a poem for today by Mary Oliver. Nothing is too small not to be wondered about. The cricket doesn't wonder if there's a heaven or if there is, if there's room for him. It's fall. Romance is over. Still he sings. If he can, he enters a house through the tiniest crack under the door. Then the house grows colder. He sings slower and slower, then nothing. This must mean something. I don't know what, but certainly it doesn't mean he hasn't been an excellent cricket all his life. A poem by Mary Oliver, Nothing is Too Small Not to be Wondered About, from her collection Felicity, published by Penguin, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by TIAA CREF, a global financial company dedicated to delivering financial outcomes that matter. TIAA CREF, created to serve, built to perform. Learn more at TIAA.org. And by the Poetry Foundation. You can subscribe to the Poetry Magazine podcast and the Poetry Off the Shelf podcast in the iTunes Store or listen at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
To my Transylvania twist. It's now the monster mash. And it's a graveyard smash. It's caught on in a flash. It's now the monster mash. Now everything's cool, Jack, the part of the band. When my monster mash is the hit of the land. For you, the living, this mash was meant to. When you get to my door, tell them board it. Then you can monster mash and do my graveyard smash. You'll catch on in a flash. Then you can monster mash.
This station comes from the Treadwell Ice Arena, located at 105 Savico Road in Douglas. Treadwell Arena is now open for the 2015-2016 season with a 5-day schedule. More information at juno.org/parkrec/icerink or call 586-4545. 1-800-878-4040.
This is Bird Note. Crows stream by overhead in the late afternoon. Rivers of crows. These are American crows with a purpose. They're headed to their night roost, a giant avian slumber party. Gathering in a park or woodland, they land in a tree, then scuffle and shuffle and squawk, filtering down through the branches. Birds arriving late force the early birds lower into the trees. Crow expert Bill Gilbert believed that the roost provides warmth, protection from predators, knowledge about food sources, and a chance to locate a prospective mate. Immature crows may spend the night in the roost year-round, but adults of breeding age generally use the roost only during the non-breeding seasons. And just how many crows are there in a roost? It all depends, but one longtime roost in Danville, Illinois, boasts nearly 100,000 birds. Not that the folks of Danville are especially happy about that. Imagine the ruckus when the first few thousand crows leave in the morning, about an hour before sunrise. Some autumn evening, follow crows to their roost, if you can, and watch these avian acrobats wheel in. Hitchcock's movie, The Birds, might come to mind. And if you go, a word of warning, you'd better take an umbrella. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
And welcome back to the studio here for a Juno afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, your host, and Molly McCormick has joined me to talk about the spooky, spooky ghost walk happening over at Jumbo Gym over in Douglas. A long-standing tradition. You were saying that you went to this when you were a child, and you and I are probably about the same age, and boy, right? You know, I mean, it's hard to believe. Do you know how many years it's been going on? Over 50 years?
Over 50 years.
That's amazing, isn't it?
And, so there's one... A buzzer game that I remember using when I was a child, and it's still there. That's one of the originals.
Where do those games get stored in the off season? Do you know? Just different people's homes?
A container. We have a container by the boat harbor.
Okay.
The boat harbor. Yeah.
And this is so it's the ghost walk. It happens at Jumbo. Most of us who've been in Juno for any amount of time probably know about it, but it did stop for a little while, right?
The Douglas Lions Club started it and ran it for many, many years, and it. They ran out of volunteers, and so it stopped for 3 or 4 years. And then Bobby Jones and the Zantakahini Middle School students picked it up, and it's been going ever since.
Well, that's a really cool thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
That someone just decided, let's get this going. And I guess it was originally to keep kids out of the cold and rain and wind of Douglas. When they were trick-or-treating, and it actually even kind of supplanted trick-or-treating door-to-door for a long time.
It did, yeah. It's a safe and enjoyable Halloween to be inside at Mount Jumbo Gym, and I guess trick or treating started when we didn't have it for those few years that we didn't have the ghost walk, and people would turn their lights on, and so you knew to stop by and trick or treat.
Right, and the lights are off, so you better watch it. You get teepeed. That's what happened in my old neighborhood. I don't know. But so tell me a little bit about it. So if people go to this, it happens from 4:30 to 6:30 tomorrow. And so when people go to it, what can they expect? It's a bunch of fun games and things like that, right?
So everyone's wearing costumes, and it's free for everyone. And it's traditional games like mini golf, hoop shoot, the duck Nerf gallery, the buzzer game, cakewalk, just traditional games, and you walk around, and there's candy treats and then non-candy treats.
Everyone's a winner. That's right. Yeah, there's no losers that go there. That's right. And how do these games happen? Are new games getting constructed all the time? Is that kind of how it goes? Or are there just like, I guess there's ones that have been around forever, huh?
There's ones that have been around
forever.
That's funny.
Then
new ones have been constructed with the help of the kids.
Yeah. And it's all these kind of fun, traditional, fair, kind of fairground kind of games, right? Like
right.
hoop toss stuff.
Beanbag.
Fun
and
things like that, yeah.
Nerf,
right.
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's really fun to think about that sort of traditional thing still happening in Juneau, you know? It's a pretty wholesome, fun little activity, right? And super safe. That's what's really cool, too. It's like no kids out on the dark roads getting blown around.
Right.
I have friends that grew up in Fairbanks, and they talk about trick-or-treating in Fairbanks with those old plastic costumes. And they went out, and they came back like in 10 minutes, and they had just shattered on them, you know, because it was so cold. Trick-or-treating in Halloween, you know, in Alaska, that is tough. You know, it's a tough duty. Okay, so it's the Ghost Walk. It's happening over at Mount Jumbo Gym. Starts at 4:30 tomorrow, goes to about 6:30 or so, and it's all happening just at Mount Jumbo Gym. So, you know, it's up on 4th Street right there, kind of right by Louise and by the gas station there.
Library.
Yeah, and by the library.
You can park by the library, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
More parking.
Yeah, great. And it's all happening tomorrow, and it's sort of thanks to DZ Middle School and also Bobby Jones, who kind of took it on. And I'm sure that if people want to get involved in helping volunteer and that kind of stuff too, could they contact someone? Or
we always could use volunteers, and you can contact me, Molly, at 321-3510. We're always looking for volunteers.
Great.
Or help.
Yeah, yeah. Just corral those kids. get him through the Mount Jumbo Gym. All right, Molly, thanks so much for coming in. Really appreciate it. That's the Ghost Walk. It's happening tomorrow. If you're over in Douglas, or even if you're not and want to go stop by Mount Jumbo Gym and head over to Douglas and have a fun Halloween with games and goodies for the kids, head on over there, 4:30 to 6:30. Thanks, Molly.
Thank you, Andy.
Okay. Well, that's a Juneau afternoon for today. Thanks, everyone, for joining me. Great to hear, and thanks from Elaine Schroeder, talking about the screening of This Changes Everything. That's a climate change documentary that's going to be playing Monday, the 2nd, at 7 p.m., and also playing again Saturday, the 7th, at 4:30 p.m. It's part of the Climate Action Film Series that will be playing all this November. Also great to hear from Playboy Spaceman, Silver Jackson, and DJ Taco Todd, Alaskan Scorcher. They're going to be doing the Dance of the Three Skulls, the Skull Party. It's all starting tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, $15 at the door. It's over at Rockwell, and going to be a blast. Sweeney Todd starts November 6th. That's next Friday. There's Pay As You Can happening Wednesday and Thursday, so go check that out. And also for tomorrow night, for the little ones, go take them over to the Ghost Walk. It's at Mount Jumbo Gym. Starts at 4:30 tomorrow, goes to about 6:30. Thanks to everyone who came in and told us about all the spooky going-ons here in Juneau. And happy Halloween, everyone.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.